This is the Venerable Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche.
Seminar entitled Bodhacharya Vatara, held at Naropa Institute in Boulder, Colorado. This is talk number 9, July 10th, 1980.
This is an ARP digital remaster made January 2008.
The following will be a talk by the Vajracharya, the Venerable Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. This is talk 8 of the Bodhacharya Vatara, given at Naropa Institute. July 10th, 1980.
Now we can get into the business, the real business, the Bodhisattva path. This evening's talk is not including the curriculum as presented to me by our organization, but still, it seemed to be there's a space and a time provided. So, however, we could regard it as good news. I would like to discuss as the conclusion of the whole course this point, as well as further spices, so to speak, jazzing up and realizing that what kind of effort that we can put in the practice of a bodhisattva path altogether. As we have discussed already, the notion of bodhicitta, that basic gene, inheritance that all beings possess and they have. Out of that, by inspired in the path of the Bodhisattva way, that people are inspired to work with others and also inspired to work with oneself. Working with oneself and working with others develops, taking the Bodhisattva vow, total commitment without a privacy, working with the others completely. And the means and the ways to do that is based on the 6 paramita principles. Having had already taken the Bodhisattva vow already, there's a sense of being generous, genuine with oneself and other, and opening one's hand, one's arms to others, which provide a sense of absence of stinginess and territoriality altogether. And then next parameter is that of the discipline, which is the absence of passion, that one never gives in to any desires, but still maintaining oneself and one's sense perceptions properly, fully, so that you are capable of maintaining oneself and you are capable of relating that maintenance to others, so there's no notion of a disrupting situation of a disharmony or decorum of any kind. Having had that kind of fully controlled discipline situation, then we begin to get a next situation where we experience the notion of a non-aggression, which is a parameter of patience. Non-aggression provides us a way as that we can work with the rest of the world, that we do not have to hold on to our territory anymore. Irritations and the potential upheavals are regarded as a source of further advancement in the bodhisattva path. So no one to blame, but still go further with the patience, sense of peace, and gentleness, softness. And exertion is next, which is free from laziness, that one never give in to laziness, that one can always continuously go further all the time. Absence of laziness. And a tremendous joy as to that as we practice in the path that we begin to evolve ourselves further, that whenever there is that tendency to take laziness as a rescuing situation by saying, I would like to take my time off and I just want to sleep and disconnect myself with the rest of the world, all oneself. Free from that, exertion is a joy, celebration of the endeavor altogether, for the sake of oneself and others at the same time. And beyond that is the meditation, one-pointedness, concentration, physically, body and the mind are synchronized properly in the meditative atmosphere, meditative discipline altogether. That brings the notion of fully developed, cherishing one's existence as a human being altogether. Mind and body are synchronized completely and fully, and therefore there is a concentration, an awareness, a mindfulness altogether, which prompt with the next parameter, which is knowledge, prajna, discriminating awareness, inspiration, as to you begin to realize what particular problems should be boycotted, what particular problems should be realized as one's basic environment, or further on, more, that one would begin to realize that what to cultivate in oneself to inspire that kind of sharp precision and openness to the world. As we discussed the six parameters already, that passion, it seems that next situation is still very basic, very ordinary, on the other hand, but on the one hand, it may be very special. That is to say, the main concern of the Mahayana path, of Bodhisattva path altogether, is that to realize and understand that basic point is that we have to exchange ourselves in others' place. That is to say, if you feel good, comfortable in your surroundings, and when you look at somebody who has a discomforting and painful situations, the practice here is to switch, to put ourselves into a discomforting situation and extend our comfort into others' welfare altogether. Which is the basic message that we discussed early on in the realizing in order to develop basic bodhicitta, basic goodness altogether, that we have to realize there's the pain of the others are very important, and our own pleasure can be given to them very naively, very ordinarily, just to give one's pleasure to the other and take their pain to us in me. And that is one of the most heroic and the basic practice of the bodhisattva path altogether. And that seemed to be a very important point in the practice of Mahayana tradition altogether. And often people who promote the notion of positive thinking in the theistic tradition will say that I feel good and I feel great. And I would like to share that to others. And whenever we discuss about the wickedness, the problematic situation of others, we don't draw them in. And they would say, well, the God will take care of that. So we are talking this case in terms of that the God has a garbage system to dump the problems that you don't want to see. He will be the garbage man to clean up, he or she, whatever it is. And so we try to be good all the time, pretending good. We don't want to see anything bad, anything wicked at all. That's not very practical. And there are screaming babies, and there are problems all over the place. We have to acknowledge that, and in order to acknowledge that, we have to absorb that problem into us. And in turn, because of your strength of capability of absorbing that, which has already strength and the power and the sanity involved, so we can send that out, goodness out, and absorb bad. And this tradition is not particularly latest liberal thinking. And this tradition is obviously 2,500 years old idea, which outsmart, in fact, liberal thinking. So we're not particularly trying to be good, heroic, or anything like that, but the basic idea is to have that exchange. And one of the slogans which says, drive all blames to oneself. Any mishaps happens in the world, absorb to yourself, like a good sponge. And generate, in turn, goodness to others, because we are so willing to do so. So that requires a certain amount of willingness to do that particular practice, which is the key to the bodhisattva principle altogether, and very important, very necessary. And I think that's one of the main points in the situation where the generosity, discipline, patience, exertion, meditation, and the prajna are made into effective is because we have adopted such attitude to exchange oneself to other. And without that, there's no way of actually accomplishing any one of those disciplines at all. And that particular practice called Donglen, in the Tibetan tradition, Dong meaning letting go, Len meaning accepting, bringing in. With that particular discipline, usually it happens with the breath. As you breathe out, goodness. as you breathe in, pain, sickness. And such practice of meditation is often done, and it is known as Maitri Bhavana, which means the meditation on loving kindness. Taking others' pain brings, one is capable of generating goodness to others. In some of Western style of thinking, or even a traditional healing concept, that may not be the case. But actually it has its own superior logic. He who is capable of bringing in pain to oneself, others' pain to oneself, is truly capable of generating greater pleasure to others. A recycling process is no particular problem. And moreover, that we try to undermine our ego, that I want to be happy along with others. So the basic point here is that if we could organize and promote the pleasure and the blissfulness of the rest of the world, we prefer to be in pain. I prefer to be in pain. Because I am taking that particular attitude that I will rejoice in pain in the sake of the rest of the sentient beings, therefore you must have some kind of guts, a greater vision, that you can generate greater joy, but at the same time one don't capitalize on that either. You maintain your existence that way, the internally generated goodness. That's how things work, so to speak. If you have any questions, you're welcome.
In progressing along the bodhisattva path, I just have a question about the ego. As you progress along this path, does the ego become purified, or does it more or less go away? And where does the ego fit in with the morality that you're talking about?
Well, generally speaking, what we're talking about, that we, as we begin to evolve further with the bodhisattva path, we begin to find our ego has less function, as used to function a lot. So it is out of commission and out of a job. And so it resigns itself, so begin to become tiny to begin with, and then at the end it become nothing, and it begin to excuse itself out altogether.
Thank you.
Because there's a role for it. Usually things are survived because there's a role for it, right? If there's no role for you, you pit it out.
How does the concept of being, of taking on the pain of others, square with being gentle with yourself? Which leads into the second half of my question, which is to do with the motivation, in a way, because quite often I think that, like, for instance, overcoming laziness with exertion can be motivated by sometimes a theistic, in the theistic tradition of overcoming sin and a sort of a concept with ego, full of ego. I'm not very clear about that.
Well, I think the basic point is that if you feel that you are capable of receiving others' pain, which automatically means that you are already talk to yourself that you are capable of doing that already to begin with, that your pain is no longer regarded as threat, a veil, a blockage, no longer. It might be still painful, but nonetheless that particular pain is no longer related with expressing one's existence. Usually neurosis happens because you would like to experience, you would like to express yourself that you do exist, therefore you feel angry and passionate. When there's no basis of that already to begin with, so pain can be absorbed already. Pain is not particularly regarded as threatening to anything. To begin with, we begin to feel that your existence is not in question. You don't have to survive out of any attacks. We can exist without existing. So there's lots of room to bring others pain, because there's no this at all. Do you understand? If there's no this, and then therefore more room. If there is this, then we have a problem with who's going to use, you know, my dining room, who's going to move into my apartment, and all those things coming into us. So since there's no dining room, there's no apartment, it's a gigantic space here already to begin with. So you can absorb tremendous pain from the others. And because of that, you can generate tremendous goodness to others too.
Thank you.
I get confused between driving the blame of others' criticism of me into myself and taking that on, distinguishing between accurate criticism and inaccurate aggression against me. And so I find myself in a confusing situation of wanting to give way and take on the blame, but also resenting the criticism.
Well, it seemed to be one of the very basic points is to begin with bring everything in. For the sake of a bodhisattva path, bring everything. Either it is accurate or inaccurate. Mm-hmm. Bring everything in completely. And digest and generate goodness others beyond that. But then, for the sake of others, obviously, one has to say, you know, express what is accurate criticism, what is not accurate, which is not really your concern, but it is in order to liberate others, so they are not involved into that particular confusion.
Yes.
So one has to act extra step, which is the bodhisattva act, by saying that this is accurate, this is not accurate, this is a criticism which is accurate, this is a criticism not accurate, but not from the motivation of by being angry or anything, that you have already digested the whole thing to begin with. So once you have digested the whole thing in your giant system, of a digestive system, which is known as bodhicitta, and once you've done that, then you can afford to speak. And when you begin to do that, strangely, others begin to respect. Because you are not talking out of aggression, passion, or anything. You are speaking the truth. There's a story about a Buddha. A lady came along in the audience and said that we had an affair together. Do you remember that? In order to bring down the Buddha's principles. Mm. And he said, "My dear lady, you and I only know the truth." That's what he said. He didn't have to say anything more. That's it.
Well, as long as I still resent criticism, then I assume that that's just not having.
You're going to feed it some more.
Yeah, so that's still then just that it must be accurate criticism as long as I resent it.
Well, to begin with, you have to digest the whole thing.
Yeah.
Either it's accurate or not, yeah, altogether. And beyond that, then you can pinpoint,
yeah,
technically.
Okay.
Gentleman in the back, all the way back.
Sir, it seems like on the Tonglang, what you do is kind of putting self back into action somewhat.
Put what?
Putting self back into action somewhat, because you couldn't exchange yourself for others if there wouldn't be something like what you call self. Well, so you're kind of trying to give it a little more extra treat somewhere.
Well, there is one self and another, because you're doing it to begin with. If there's you to do it, there got to be others. And one cannot philosophize too much. It's somewhat dirty work, bring the dirt, sending out the cleanness.
So it seems to me that the Mahayanist, so to speak, kind of acknowledged some kind of sense of self and started to work with that.
Yes. Well, not necessarily the Mahayanas found itself, but you found yourself. You have a you as you. Where to begin is here, now, on this very cushion. But then there's others who are not on this cushion. It's very simple and very ordinary. And on that basis, we just exchange that there, sitting on your cushion, you are not sitting on any cushion at all.
Well, I'm just standing right now, but anyhow, I mean...
Well, say the same thing. Maybe it's German logic.
Well, anyhow, like doing Tonglen...
Right now?
Well, I find it very hard to exchange you with myself.
Sure, you can. You can. Because I'm here, you're there. Therefore, well, you can exchange.
You, anyhow. Anyhow. I find it very hard to kind of see if I'm doing Tonglen, for example, I'm getting into a feeling of righteousness, because I have done my sitting practice before. And then I'm exchanging myself with others, you know, having done
well,
my...
Well, then you have supposed to dissolve what you've done at the end, dissolving into alaya. Altogether, after that, you dissolve this and that altogether at the end of your practice. So maybe you should study the text more. You find out, I think our problem here, what we're talking, is not particularly problematic. It's very precise and very basic.
Mm-hmm.
As long as if you study the text, it exactly tells you what to do.
Well, I think it's always the kind of the fear, something like that, you know, anxiety, which kind of pops up and things. If myself
yeah,
is going to exchange,
well, see what happens.
You know, then
it's exciting.
It is, actually.
Can you imagine if you become other all the time? It's an amazing experience.
Well, actually, That might be somewhat, sounds very
ego-related,
but I felt that, mm-hmm. and it felt very cheerful, actually.
Yeah, yeah. That is good.
Rinpoche, in regards to what you said about prajna, you said an aspect of boycotting situations. I was wondering situations in terms of other. We've been talking about exchanging self for other. When would be the appropriate time or situation that you would boycott, or what does boycott mean?
Boycotting what?
Boycotting a certain situation regarding other? I'm not sure what you meant when you said in terms of prajna boycotting.
Well, I think prajna basically is the notion of precision and clarity. Very precise. It happens to be so precise that it is not based on even the concept of this person being prajna-like or the others being prajna-like at all. It is a razor knife which exists nowhere. It's cutting throughout the whole thing. That's the prajna. That is what's known as the discriminating awareness wisdom. It's self-cutting as well as it's cutting all, everything. So when you have that kind of such sharp precision, which is obviously the product of generosity, discipline, exertion, patience, blah, blah, blah. But it's that sharp and so precise. And one does not have to actually rely on any other help at all. There is already that sharp, precise, so clear, crystal clear principle already exists there, which comes with the first thought or second thought of when you begin to tune into it, having established generosity and blah, blah, blah. So it cuts both ways. It cuts the whole thing. So that seemed to be the basic point. And the prajna stands very pure and clean and precise.
So you use the word boycott in terms of it cuts through unnecessary situations,
mm-hmm.
unnecessary activity.
Anything comes in the way, it cuts through. One doesn't have even a request to be cut through, but it cuts through right away.
Would stepping out of a situation possibly include that cutting through?
Well, boycotting concept is realizing effort that you're putting into unnecessary situation, stepping out of that is what's known as boycotting, right? So you begin to realize the things that we cherish a lot and we try to accomplish a lot, putting so much effort and energy, and we begin to find out at the end they are not really relevant. We'll be wasting our time. So we step out of that, which is a boycotting. And that's what's called a samsara, actually, technically speaking. very technical speaking. Samsara is unnecessary actions that we waste our actions all the long. We fight this, that, trying to be passionate, aggressive, ignorant, and everything we've been fighting all along. And who are we fighting? Nobody. And we begin to realize we have wasted so much energy and effort, so you just step out of that boycotting. And when we're done defeated, they collapse already. Samsaric structures collapse already. We step out on the egoless side, and we have a prajna, generosity, and the rest of it. So that's how we actually destroy samsaric world by not feeding anymore. Let them collapse.
Thank you very much.
Gentleman with the tail.
I have a couple of questions. One's on the paramitas, and the other's about giving up self for others. You have any preference?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay. Start with the paramitas, I guess. This is about sort of started to talk about this with the regent the other night, but didn't get the feeling we were finished. Don't get the feeling we'll probably finish tonight either, but it's about sort of in the paramitas there being action, actual action, rather than just thinking about it and contemplating it, but actually doing generous acts. Maybe that has something to do with vigor or something, actually going out and exchanging oneself for others in concrete acts. And I was wondering how prajna comes in there, rather, because I get to a sort of threshold of knowing I should be generous and having an awareness of that all the time, but what do I do? I mean, what is there to do? And, I feel impotent and held down.
Yes. Well, you see, the basic point is that we don't want to get too religious about this whole thing. That seems to be the main point. And save the world concept of, you know, being a religious savior. But if we go beyond that, then obviously the basic principle begins with the training one's mind, practice meditation, and also post-meditation experience, how much awareness you can develop in relating with the looking, developing oneself in the precision so that you don't make a mess of yourself or others' world. And then you can launch your great bodhisattva drives of the generosity and the discipline and whatever, which you are quite right. We are not talking about the principles of theory, but we are actually talking about the doing, so actually putting them into fact. And one do it by step. And we have the book, the Shantideva's book, which is available to everybody, and maybe you should look into that. And also Gampopa, Jewel of Liberation, talks about how to go about the whole thing very precisely, very ordinarily, how to go about. So you are quite right, sir, by saying that we don't want to become all this theoretical, but we have to actually do it. And that is the actually text fact in the world. And also, not regarding while you do that, regarding yourself as the master of the ceremony as such, but you are also a practitioner. You are a student on the way. You are just working your way when relating with others. And you could be regarding yourself as a practitioner still rather than a master, which some people have always problem. And they always automatically want to build themselves as the savior of the world, with a big flag. So very simple and direct. And I think you have a good intention. Why don't you go ahead and do it?
That's what I was trying to ask you.
You can do it. Okay?
Okay.
You can do it.
Thank you.
You ready next door? Yeah.
Sir, I have a question on dealing with when you want to be generous to somebody else and you want to like exchange places, or you want to give something to them that is makes you happy, you know, you want to, or whatever, it's hard to explain, but that basic idea, and then they say, no, go ahead and keep it, and they don't want to take it at all, you know? And then I'm stuck and I don't know what to do. I say,
take
then
it
I'd
off.
Say, huh?
Take it off, did you say?
Huh? Take it.
Off.
Take it off.
Did you say that?
No. No, take it back.
Take it back, I see.
Yeah, they say take it back. And I'm stuck there. And I may say, no, go ahead and keep it. And they say, no, keep it back. And then I'm going, oh no, you know, now what do I do? And it becomes sometimes, it's almost like a fight, you know? And yeah. I feel like maybe I'm trying to be heroic because of this, you know.
No, I think it takes a lot of waiting and preparation. When you do it properly. But you don't just do it for simple actions, but you try to do it with a basic principles of some kind. And if you be generous with somebody, keep it that way. So see how they respond to it. If they're capable or not, right? Mm-hmm. And if they're capable, they will respond to it that way. If they're not capable, they act with ignorance. And so you have to put more effort and try to make them more generous.
What kind of effort you mean?
And it's a question of not so much tit for tat, but it's a question of having a greater vision and see how the whole thing happens. So it's different than just like feeding an infant bird, a little chick. Mm-hmm. Will they chip and bounce around you, mm-hmm. and take your food? It's not quite at that level. It has to have a greater level.
Uh-huh.
So how they actually respond to a greater vision altogether.
Nice.
Well, let's try.
Okay.
I'm sure you can do it.
Okay. I also have another question. It's sort of the same thing. It's like when someone wants to give something to you and they're doing it, and you know that you want to receive it as being generous to them, and then you know that it's going to make them very painful. It's going to make them real uncomfortable. What do you do then? It's like almost like a martyr sort of thing, you know?
That seemed to be all right.
Huh?
They have to learn to behave themselves.
Okay.
I think that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
That's fine. Well, the whole thing is not going to be all that easy and smooth, but there are a lot of pros and cons. And there are a lot of pain and pleasures takes place, but sooner or later we had let people know how to conduct themselves in any way. It seemed to be all right.
Okay, thank you.
Gentlemen in the back there? Glasses?
Rinpoche, I would like a little clarity on what it means to take in pain of others. How is taking in the pain of others different from the simply perceiving the pain of others?
Taking pain is definitely taking their pain to yourself. not only just seeing the pain, but actually with your willingness to draw the pain into your system by means of this particular practice called Donglin practice, with the breathing, the infections and influenzas, whatever they have, the cancers, anything, breathing in quite freshly, breathing in, literally. It's not theoretical, just to let yourself be subject to all those, literally doing it. And then there's the more fresh, you can breathe out goodness at the same time. So that's why it's called a heroic approach. Lady over there?
If other is the aggressor, and in the history of this country, he's been a very grave oppressor, of what value is practicing non-aggression?
Well, non-aggression is not valued at all. We just do it. Whoever they are, doesn't really matter. If they are zebra or black or white, or they're red or blue, it doesn't matter at all. We just do it. That's what I mean. The whole thing is that this particular practice, that we don't put the others into categories, pigeonholes at all. We just accept very naively anybody, absolutely anybody, and bring them in. Do you understand? Is there any problem still?
Yes.
What is that?
I don't understand.
You don't understand to bring everybody in? We don't have to actually categorize anybody. Bring anybody in your in-breath. Any one of them. Doesn't really matter at all. Do you have more to say?
Not at the moment.
If you do Tonglin practice and you have any sense of there being something left over, is that...
You mean when you do Tonglin practice?
Right.
Yeah. All right. Is there something what? Left over? What do you mean by that?
Well, I guess that would be if you weren't doing it properly.
I think nobody can actually miss, unless they want to cheat themselves. They know that there is a bad and good, unwholesome and wholesome. People have no problem with that. Particularly, everybody has experienced pollution and fresh air, which is analogous to breathing out and good already. I can't imagine anybody can miss that such vivid. You've got to be beyond the idiot level. I think people can do that. They are capable more and more in the modern ages.
Thank you.
Thanks, though.
Sir, when you speak about literally breathing in, taking in people's cancer and infection, taking it in, Does that mean that there's no danger because there's no this? Or could you explain how there's no danger in doing that?
Well, there might be danger. That's the main point. That's the main point. There might be danger. And in fact, to the extent of the very extreme, you are actually taking the cancers of the universe in your system. You might be cancerous yourself with everything, every complaint. Cancers, the bones and the limbs and everything. And you might be actually getting them. But still, beyond that idea is that actually being heroic, that you're able to absorb such universal pain in your system and you become martyr of such a situation. We're talking about a very literal way. We're actually talking about a business this morning. We are not talking about how you can be saved by being good at the same time. You become so good at attacking anybody at the same time, you are not affected by it. No. We are not talking about that. That would be pure deception. And we are talking about actually taking in, literally, we might have it for the sake of others. That is what we are talking about.
Getting infected ourselves.
Yes.
To relieve
having cancer.
Infection.
Yes, sure. Right. Absolutely. But at the same time, you can project goodness at the same time. Mm-hmm. But we are really talking business at this point. And we are not talking about feeling that somewhat you feel good about the whole thing because you've been so generous, mm-hmm. but at the same time you don't want to get into the dirt. Mm-hmm. Oh no. We are talking about real business. And it's possible. And we have to actually learn to sacrifice ourselves that way.
Thank you.
I have a question of when does Maitri or acceptance of someone else's pain, whatever it is, when can that turn into like some kind of conspiracy of indulgence, actually indulging in or allowing that person to indulge in that pain?
I think question of how you actually let go of your ego. That this is not doing it. You are dedicating yourself to others altogether. So this is not going to get credentials, anything like, which is largely based on Shamatha Vibhashana discipline altogether, and also having a good understanding of sending and taking.
Okay, when I accept someone, you know, their complete neurosis, sometimes I allow a lot of indulgence. I mean, I've sensed that I've created more pain and confusion for a person by allowing that indulgence. And
you have to learn to cut through. You don't relax in the indulgency, but you have to learn to cut. Uh-huh. Speak frankly. Direct message. Ça va?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Rinpoche, I have a question along the same lines. When one begins to, when a sense of Maitri begins developing out of one's own practice, and one starts to relax one's struggle with the makeup of one's mind, including passion, aggression, ignorance, it seems as though that there's a tendency to begin to indulge in one's neurosis because you're starting to see that there's path quality in it, that there's a tremendous amount to learn from one's speediness, from one's fear, from all that stuff. And then one can, I mean, I see this in myself and others, that then one can begin to talk about genuine aggression and actually be putting aggression out and seemingly indulging in it because one believes that, well, that's what I am. Mm-hmm. And I've made my peace with that and there's something to learn from this. Mm-hmm. Which seems to be somewhat twisted.
I don't think so. Well, we don't want to particularly become psychological about the whole thing. I think the main point is just a very domestic level. Have a sitting practice, a standing and taking practice. That's it. Simplify everything at that level. I think a sense of warning, both of you, is very good. And maintain that kind of watchfulness that you don't trip out on things. But in order to purify the whole thing, it's just sitting, standing, and taking practice. Make it very literal, very ordinary, that way. That's good. Congratulations. We have such genuine students. It's wonderful. We've gone quite a long way since we started Naropa Institute 5 years ago. Oh boy, all those days. Nobody will ask such questions. They will say, how can I have this bliss or that bliss? That goodness, that good. And now we are talking about how we actually be genuine. It's a tremendous switch rule. It's wonderful. With that note, we could end, actually. And this seemed to be the last of this particular class. And also, we are reaching to the next end of this particular session altogether. And I appreciate very much working with all of you. On behalf of my regent and myself, I would very much like to express appreciation to all of you. And thank you very much. And please keep on practicing. What you've learned is good. It is straight from heritage of our tradition. And without any modification at all. So you receive good call, good power. Please appreciate and maintain it, keep it with yourself. And maybe we'll see in next lives to come, next years to come. Thank you very much. Okay. Mm-hmm.